Luke chapter 12, this morning we begin in verse 35. Stay dressed for action, and keep your lamps burning, and be like men who are waiting for their master to come home from the wedding feast, so that they may open the door to him at once when he comes and knocks. Blessed are those servants whom the master finds awake when he comes. Truly, I say to you, he will dress himself for service and have them recline at table, and he will come and serve them. If he comes in the second watch or in the third and finds them awake, blessed are those servants. But know this, that if the master of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not have left his house to be broken into. You also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Peter said, Lord, are you telling this parable for us or for all? And the Lord said, Who then is the faithful and wise manager, whom his master will set over his household to give them their portion of food at the proper time? Blessed is that servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will set him over all his possessions. But if that servant says to himself, My master is delayed in coming, and begins to beat the male and female servants, and to eat and drink and get drunk, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him and at an hour he does not know, and will cut him in pieces and put him with the unfaithful. May God bless the reading and the preaching of His holy word. Amen. This is the 11th and final sermon in this particular series through the Gospel of Luke, looking at Jesus' words of blessing and curse. We've divided up these texts in some places for ease of study, but just to make it easy, we'll say that 11 times in the Gospel, Jesus has issued either covenant blessings or covenant curses. 11 times He has shown us by His powerful words what we should embrace and what we should reject. I mentioned a couple weeks ago that this passage was the one instance I was going to take out of order. Partially, this is a pastoral decision. You may have noticed that the last several weeks have all been on woes and curses, and I preferred to end the series on a text of blessing rather than curse. But there is also something unique about the blessing in this morning's text when we compare it to the others. It's not in narrative. It's in parable. Sure, the telling of the parable is within the context of narrative. Jesus is meeting with His disciples. He did have this conversation with Peter. These events really did occur. But the words of blessing themselves, they come not directly, but through the telling of a parable. I've emphasized throughout this series that Jesus' words of blessing and curse are effective. That is, when He speaks them, He's not just using this kind of language as a way of emphasizing the things that He really likes and the things He really doesn't like. He is actually issuing covenant blessings and covenant curses. But in this morning's text, how can that be? If these words are not spoken directly, but are communicated through parable, how can they actually issue covenantal blessing? I hope that as we look at the text this morning, it will become clear to us that what Jesus says in this blessing is no less powerful than what He has uttered elsewhere in the book. The difference is not in the reality of the blessing, but in the timing of the blessing. As we'll see this morning, the actions that Jesus pronounces blessing upon here have not yet occurred, and so they cannot yet be blessed. But Jesus, in telling a parable, is making a promise to His disciples and to us about what the reward will be for faithful service, covenant blessing. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's look closely at the text together. Jesus tells this parable of a master and his servants. And whether you call them encouragements or instructions or warnings, Jesus uses the parable to show His disciples three important things. The first is that they must keep awake. He says in verse 35, "Stay dressed for action and keep your lamps burning." Today we'd say, don't put on your PJs and turn off the lights just yet. This is the time to be awake. In the parable, the picture is painted of a master who has several servants. And as masters often do, the man in the parable goes away for a while. He goes off, in this case, to a wedding feast, and he leaves his family and his possessions in the care of his servants. Communication, not being what it is today, a time of no cell phones and no pay phones even, the servants would have no way of knowing for sure when exactly the master would return. This meant that whenever he did return, it would be, relatively speaking, a surprise to the servants. Maybe you did this as children. I certainly did. Or children, maybe some of you have done this recently. You're supposed to be cleaning your room or doing homework or some other task that mom assigned you. But instead, you get distracted by a game or a book. And the next thing you know, mom has snuck up on you and you're busted. She caught you. You didn't know she was coming and she caught you. This text uses several ways to describe just that kind of surprise arrival. Verse 38 speaks of the master coming on the second or the third watch. That would have been anywhere from 9 at night to 3 in the morning. Now, I think even if you're a night owl, you'd be caught off guard by someone showing up at 3 in the morning. In fact, the only person you'd expect to come at 3 in the morning is a thief. Jesus uses that language too as an illustration. In verse 39, the point is that if you knew that the thief was coming to rob your house at 2 a.m. on Thursday, I'm pretty sure you'd be ready for them. Just like that if we had known mom was about to come around the corner, we'd put down the game and start cleaning our room. But Christ reminds us that the thief's coming is a surprise. It catches us off guard precisely because we're not watching for it. And the reward, he says, comes for the one who is diligent and prepared. The thief doesn't sneak up on him, and so his home and his goods are safe. Christ says that the servants who keep awake are not caught off guard by the master's arrival. And thus, when he returns, they're doing exactly what they are supposed to do. And because of this, he pronounces blessings upon them. It's actually a really remarkable blessing. Two, if you read what he describes in verse 37, he says, truly I say to you, he will dress himself for service and have them recline at table, and he will come and serve them. The master, so pleased with the faithful stewardship, serves the servants. This is the reward for the diligent service, that one day they will be served. This is no small event. The servant isn't just being served by another servant. That would perhaps be strange enough. But in this instance, the master has humbled himself and taken the position of a servant to show his love and gratitude for the faithfulness of his own servants. This is such a blessing that Jesus repeats that word, blessed, 3 times in this short passage. In verse 37 and 38 and again in 43 to show us what a remarkable blessing this is. In verse 40, Jesus then draws the parallel between his parable and our reality. He says to the disciples, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Today, we are more aware of how true these words are than even the disciples were. Now, the title Son of Man is one of great messianic significance. It does refer to Jesus, but specifically emphasizing his second coming. The Son of Man is coming again. Every generation of Christians have lived with full certainty of the imminent return of Jesus. And yet none have had the slightest idea when that return will be. We know the Master is coming back. We don't know when he's coming, so we ought to be diligent and keep awake all the time. And yet, isn't it easy to fall into slumber? Isn't it easy to stop thinking about his coming? And if we do this, when he returns, he'll find us unfaithful as to the charge we've been given. And so Jesus warns the disciples that they and that we must keep awake, for you do not know the hour of His coming. I find Peter's response to Jesus' teaching a bit odd. He asks the question in verse 41, Lord, are you telling this parable for us or for all? Perhaps Peter was being selfish here. Maybe he wanted the parable to be just for the disciples so that the blessing would also be just for the disciples. Or maybe Peter's feelings were hurt. Perhaps he thought that by Jesus giving this warning, he was implying that it was the disciples who really needed to look out and not fall asleep. And Peter is offended, for he knows the disciples would never fall asleep on Jesus' watch. Either way, Jesus responds with a clear indication that these requirements and this promise apply to anyone who wants to be called His servant. In this, He also gives the second piece of instruction for the disciples and us. Keep on task. He begins verse 42 by describing the faithful and wise manager. And He says, this is the servant who's been given a specific duty. And He gives the example of being set over the household to give them their portion of food in the proper time. And He says that the faithful servant, the servant that will receive the blessing, is the one who is actually doing his duty when the master returns. The one who is faithful is the one who first stays awake, and second, does his duty, keeps on task. The responsibilities that the master has entrusted to his servants are to be honored. The answer to Peter's question seems to be that Jesus' teaching is intended for anyone who will serve Him in this way. The disciples have been given duties by Christ, and He expects that they will fulfill those duties and will be found faithful in the time of His return. But all who would follow Christ have been given responsibilities as His servants, and Christ calls us all to faithfulness. God calls some of His servants to do missions work. We were praying for Jeff Osborne, Jeff and Sheila, one of our missionaries. The Davenport family with us today have been called by God to serve Him in Peru. Some of us are called to pastor local churches. If we fail to be obedient to His call, we will miss out on the blessing that comes when He returns to find His faithful servants. But perhaps God hasn't called you to full-time missionary work or full-time ministry. Does that get you off the hook? Not in the least. You're called to be faithful to His Son through the study of His Word and devotion to prayer. You're called to be a faithful servant by loving your neighbor as yourself. You're called to be a faithful servant by serving Christ's church and His kingdom in whatever ways He has gifted you and enabled you to serve. And we've all been called to the work of sanctification. See, when the Master returns, He expects to find us on task. He expects to find us each doing our duty. Will He? At the end of our passage this morning, Christ lays out the alternative to faithful service. And by doing so, He makes a third point worthy of consideration. We must keep our eyes on His coming. Let's read beginning in verse 45. But if that servant says to himself, my master is delayed in coming, and begins to beat the male and female servants and to eat and drink and get drunk, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him and at an hour he does not know, and he will cut him in pieces and put him with the unfaithful. As I said, this is the alternative to being a faithful servant. This is the servant who does not keep awake, who neglects his duty, and who is caught off guard by the master's return. He lives by that mantra I used to hear in the business world, when the cat's away, the mice will play. And it's easy, it would be, to read this passage and to focus on the sinful choices of this servant and think that this is Jesus' main point. Verse 45 describes him as violent and cruel, as a glutton and a drunk. And it would be easy to think, well, instead of being faithful, this man was violent and cruel and gluttonous and a drunkard, and that's the real problem. But if you focus on those particular sins, you will miss the true cause of this servant's downfall. Jesus describes the cause not at the end of verse 45, but right at the beginning. But if that servant says to himself, "My master is delayed in coming." The servant's downfall does not begin with any sin of action, of violence or of gluttony. His downfall begins with a sin of thought. He doesn't believe his master is coming back. He thinks that he has time to take it easy and to do his will rather than his master's. He thinks that the responsibilities he's been given can wait, that there will be no harm done from a brief period of unfaithfulness. Many in the church today have this mentality. It's especially common among young people, but it can affect all of us. When you're young, it's so hard to imagine how quickly time passes. I'm just beginning to learn that myself through having a child that seems like yesterday he was born. Time passes so quickly. And that means that life can quickly get away from you. Time and time again, a young person has allowed themselves just a few minutes, a few moments of unfaithfulness, only to see those few minutes expand into years and decades. And do you know why this happens? It's because the servant who can convince himself that his master isn't coming back in the next 5 minutes can just as easily convince himself that he won't come the next day either, or the next month, or the next year. And the consequences are dramatic. Jesus uses very violent imagery here to describe the master's response to his unfaithful servants. He says that the master will cut him in pieces and put him with the unfaithful. That phrase suggests the destruction of the body and the punishment of the soul. It describes what happens when covenantal curses are poured out on the unfaithful. And this will be the result if the master comes back to his servants and found that they have not kept watch. In my experience, there's only one way of avoiding this kind of covenantal unfaithfulness. We must beware because it's our natural tendency to let time get away from us. It's easy to fall asleep. It's easy to become undisciplined in the things God requires of us. It's easy to get lazy. And this happens because we stop thinking about the reality of our master's return. This means that the only way of avoiding falling asleep is to keep our eyes on his coming. When you really believe, when you know for certain that mom is coming around the corner, it's pretty easy to put the game down and do what you're supposed to do. When you know for certain that the thief is coming, can't you stay awake and guard the house? Christians, if we truly believe that Christ is coming again in glory to judge the living and the dead, won't we remain faithful? I've also found that words like these, warnings from the mouth of Jesus, have a tendency to convict us and to motivate us into a renewed burst of faithfulness. Unfortunately, those bursts are often short-lived. We're reminded in a sermon that Jesus is coming back. We get a little bit frightened of being found unfaithful. And so we'll start to make some changes. We'll get rid of some of the sinful things in our lives. Maybe we'll sign up for a new Bible study or buy ourselves a new devotional book. will look hard for things we can do that will keep us more faithful. We'll do this for a while. But eventually, when we've added these new duties to our lives, when time has passed, and we've noticed that Jesus still hasn't returned, we'll begin to get weary, and then we'll fall asleep. I'd like for us to consider perhaps a better response to Jesus' teaching. Now, this response isn't initially going to seem as drastic or as significant as what I just described. But the thought is that this response could endure beyond a couple of weeks. As Jesus describes the qualities of faithful servants in this text, there are a few things that jump out at me. I notice that he doesn't seem to be requiring any remarkable or impressive actions from them. He's not asking them to lead a revolution, to make him a fortune, to dedicate themselves to constant study, or to gain a remarkable reputation in the community. It seems from the text that he expects them to be faithful servants, doing exactly and only what he has instructed each one of them to do. It seems to me that this picture fits well with our doctrine of justification. We can't be saved by works, no matter how remarkable or amazing those works might be. Why then, when we feel convicted about a lack of faithfulness, are we always trying to take on more religious and spiritual duties? Why aren't we simply figuring out exactly what he's called us to do and seeking to do it? I also observe that the master does not demand of his servants moral perfection. He wants them to be awake. He wants them to do their duty. But there's nothing in the text that indicates that the standard for this blessing is perfection. And yet, when I consider the times of conviction in my own life, I see that the way I normally respond to conviction is by trying to be perfect. And so I set up new rules for myself, new disciplines, thinking that if I could just remove all the sin from my life, then the Master would find me faithful. But when I do that, I'm denying our own doctrine of sanctification. We cannot achieve perfection in and of ourselves. That's not what this is about. The only way we can obtain the moral purity necessary to be in God's presence is precisely when we give up our own efforts at being perfect and accept Christ's righteousness as a gift from God to us. There's no amount of self-improvement you can do as the result of this sermon or any other that will make Christ see you as a more faithful servant. See, Christ's faithful servants, in reality, are the ones who allow Christ to serve them. They're the ones who recognize that without His service, without our humble reliance upon Him, we could never be made whole and never be found faithful. When Jesus speaks to us, we need to listen to what He's saying and be very careful not to take away from and not to add to His words. This morning, He's calling us to faithfulness. But He's not introducing new boxes we have to check or new hoops through which we must jump. He's telling us to stay awake and be faithful. How? By keeping an eye on His coming. The disciples had Jesus with them. And even in the moments leading up to His death, sometimes they failed to recognize that He would be going away. Do you think if they understood the magnitude of what was about to happen, they would have fallen asleep in the garden? I don't think so. I still remember as a kid when I couldn't fall asleep on Christmas Eve. And why was that? Well, because I knew something big, something great was going to happen the next day. Now as an adult, we still sometimes experience that. The inability to sleep the night before a big event. Why? Because it's hard to sleep when you know that something important is about to happen. What does Christ require of us? Stay awake. Do our duty. How can we do this? He says, by constantly keeping our eyes focused on His return. By believing something important is about to happen. This faithfulness is not easy. But the weight of this responsibility is not primarily on us. For you see, I can do all things through Him who gives me strength. It's not easy. It takes strength, but His and not ours. Through Christ, we can persevere as faithful servants. And isn't that what we want to do? Isn't that the desire that we all have? That when we're aged, we would long to say of ourselves, as Paul did in 2 Timothy, I've fought the good fight. I've finished the race. I've kept the faith. Henceforth is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. Don't we want to know with confidence that those words are true of us? And more importantly, don't we want, when our Master returns in that hour, for Him to speak of us with the marvelous words of blessing? Well done, my good and faithful servant. Through Christ, these things can be said of us. That's why Paul concludes that passage in 2 Timothy 4 by saying, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to those who have loved His appearing. Do you want to be found as a good and faithful servant when He comes? Love His appearing. Even now, keep your eye fixed on His appearing. Don't try to do more than He asks. Don't try to be perfect in a way that you could never be. Don't take these burdens on yourself. But keep your eyes fixed on His coming. So that when He comes and He looks for His faithful servants, you will be found as a servant of the King, and He will serve us.